This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Try to put on the show.
It is Danny and Gallant. I do have. I boiled down 6.5 minutes of Zach Plesac driving around. If he just released these 30 seconds, it would have been a perfectly fine statement. It was the rest that was the problem. We'll play that after Blue 42 because we got Michael Bumpus joining us here on Friday for Blue 42.
Here we go. This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, half back, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
Good morning, Bump. We are not sneaking you onto our show. We are bringing you onto our show. Happy Friday, buddy. How are you?
Happy Friday, fellas. I'm doing well. How are you guys doing today?
Well, I think we're all doing better than Kima Siverin, who was
still employed, man.
Right.
Broke no quarantine protocols in my house.
Nope, haven't broken those. I wear my mask around the office when I leave the studio. Kima Siverin is no longer a member of the Seattle Seahawks. We'll see if he ever gets a chance to play in the NFL again, but I imagine it's going to be an uphill climb for him. For those who don't know, he was cut after trying to get a woman into his team hotel room. My favorite part about this story is Tom Pelissero and his tweet about this story where he says, the woman was wearing Seahawks gear in an attempt to disguise her as a player, I'm told. It did not work. That last sentence in particular really gets me. Bump. Is this something that we're going to see more of? And what's your immediate reaction to this fairly amusing story?
My immediate reaction was, I know what he's doing. Something tells me this guy isn't from Seattle, right? He's not from this area. He's an undrafted free agent. He's happy to have the gear. He's like, look, I'm going to flex on him real quick. You know, I'm going to use my status right now to benefit in other areas. So I'm going to try to get this young lady into the hotel room. And he just didn't do a great job of it, man. I mean, you're dressing her up in Seahawks gear. I mean, I heard you, I think you said it earlier, Danny. Like, who is she, Tyler Lockett? That's the only person who could really pass. I mean, you can try to pass as a Seahawk player. I'm like, what are you thinking? You know, did she have her hair in a bun? Did she hide her hair? Like, I have so many questions now. Like, I want to see the footage. Were they sneaking around? Was she walking around like she owned the place? Like, what did this look like? So, not a great decision, but guarantee you, he's not the first to do it, and he's not going to be the last to do it. But I expected this from the younger guys. It's always going to be the younger guys. It's not going to be the old guys who've been there for a while who really cherish their sleep. You know, when you get old, you get in your 30s, man, sleep is everything. I mean, I will push the snooze button 3 or 4 times to get an extra 15 minutes of sleep. So it was just a dumb mistake. But unfortunately for him, now he's unemployed. Now he doesn't have a chance to live his dream. And I don't think someone is going to take a chance on him because he's showing that he's irresponsible and that you just can't trust him. So sucks for him, man.
The other thing, and this just in general, and it goes for the baseball players too, teams are taking this incredibly seriously. And I think that reflects, I mean, one, I think it does reflect a consciousness among people that it's a serious issue. But I think it's also that teams recognize that your ability to stay healthy it's going to relate to your chances at winning. Like, not to be, and trivialize all of the other things, because clearly NFL success isn't as important as stopping a pandemic. But for the players, there's also a sense of, dude, if you get us sick, it's going to screw our chances at winning, and we're not having it. I've been, I guess, surprised at how adamant players, like players are really, really adamant about it. Cleveland's players are mad at those two pitchers.
Because guys want to play, and they want to get paid, too. They want to go out and make money and have fun doing what they love doing. So you have to take this seriously. And it's up to the older guys. You know, I watched that first episode of Hard Knocks, and the head coach from the Chargers said it the best. He goes, look, teams who handle this situation the best are going to have greater chances to win down and in, because you're going to limit guys getting affected. You're going to have guys available. So it's just making adjustments. Everyone has to adjust during this time. And it's training camp, right? You're supposed to be locked in anyway. So I feel for the young man because I've been there. I may have done that.
You've been there. You know what I mean? Done that.
You know, so I understand where he's coming from. He better marry the girl. I ended up marrying my fiance, you know, so I hope that works out for him. But
for you.
It's different times, man. It's a pandemic. There's stuff going on. He's got to be smarter than that.
Do you think that when they caught her going into the room, like, it would have been the fairest solution is for someone to come in and say, all right, she's going to be able to come into your room. You're not going to have a job after this. But we thought it was unfair to fire you and keep her from coming into your room. So enjoy, because it just cost you your run with the Seahawks.
Yeah, they probably just let it happen. And then on their way out, they're just sitting there waiting for him. Like, I hope it was worth it, buddy. Yeah, give me your playbook and go clean out your locker.
They're running up the bill on the minibar on that one. Right?
Go out
cleaning
with a bang.
It out.
Question number two. Bruce Arians allegedly, he says that he curses out Tom Brady like every other player. Here's the sound from the Bucs coach.
Oh, no, he's just another guy. You know, he gets cussed out like everybody else. So it's no different that way.
Do you buy that?
Yeah, right. You're not cussing out Tom Brady. Are you kidding me? Tom Brady, 6 Super Bowl championships. You're not cussing that man out. You might, like, cuss with him. You know, you guys are having a conversation. You might drop an F-bomb there. But you're not calling out the guy who's supposed to save your franchise. I understand that they're almost the same age, right? They're both up there in age. You know, they can probably connect when it comes to issues or whatnot. But it's like, come on, this is Tom Brady. You're not going to do that. And especially in front of the young guys. I remember I heard a story, I believe it was the Cleveland Browns back in the day, and Jim Brown was playing, and he was late to the bus. It was him and like 3 other dudes, and the coach didn't yell at Jim Brown. He yelled at the other 2 dudes, but the message was for Jim Brown, just because you don't do that to a guy with that much status. It is what it is. He has to hold a certain light in front of his teammates, so him cussing out Tom Brady wouldn't be smart, and I think he's smarter than that, so I don't think he's doing that.
Belichick did it to Brady a lot, though. And
really?
He did.
Like, he cussed him?
Yeah. Bill O'Brien did it with Tom Brady. Now, that's maybe a different
story. That's because Bill O'Brien can't say 5 words without one of them starting with the letter F.
Classic Bill O'Brien. So, it's something he's used to, but I also don't think it's as believable if Bruce Arians is doing it. And I feel like he's sort of patting himself on the back. He's like, oh, yeah, well, I'm just like Bill Belichick. Of course I curse at Tom Brady.
Tom Brady doesn't have to listen to Bruce Arians.
He shouldn't listen. In fact, this is the first time. Listen, a lot of people here don't like Bruce Arians. This is the first time that I've turned on Bruce Arians. You don't talk to my guy like that. You don't do that, Bruce. Bad Bruce.
Bill Belichick and Tom Brady had 20 years together. You're with someone 20 years, you're going to curse at each other. You're going to go back and forth. This is a brand new relationship. They're still in the courting phase. They're in the honeymoon phase. You're not cursing at anybody like that, especially Tom Brady.
Sweetie.
I get it. Bruce Arians is cool. He wears his hats. He has his glasses. You know, he wants to hold like a certain persona in front of his players. I get that, but you're not cursing out Tom Brady. Tom Brady's probably cursing you out, honestly.
The other thing, and this might be a little too autobiographical, but when you're in a longer-term relationship, you can say less. Like, people think, like, the volume or the intensity. Like, no, because you know exactly where the spot that's going to annoy someone. Like, you don't have to curse anymore. Like, you can just say something really cutting about something very specific. Like, the fights become more subtle but more vicious.
Oh, that's so accurate, Danny. Well said, sir.
Question number 3. Bob, I'm curious if over the last couple of years you have seen a change in Russell Wilson. For us, the most that we typically get out of Russell Wilson and maybe him humanizing himself is when he is in front of a press conference microphone. And it's very rare that you actually get, I think, the true and authentic Russell Wilson. But I found it noteworthy, some of the things that he said at yesterday's press conference, in particular. This is a guy that you can tell seems to have some real confidence that he is not afraid to share vocally that I'm not sure he necessarily had in the past.
No, I'm with you. I think he's always been confident, right? But now he's expressing it a bit more and he's doing it in different ways. You know, and certain things like, he used to say things like, you know what I mean. Now he says, nah, I mean, you know, it's like his swag It's just different. He's like, I'm Russell Wilson, baby. I got Sierra. I'm one of the best quarterbacks in the league.
Unlimited.
He should. He's one of the best quarterbacks in the league, if not the best quarterback in the league. And when you've played at such a high level for a long time, you have to exude confidence. And that confidence just filters out to your teammates as well. So hate it or love it, that's Russell Wilson. He is the man. He is one of the faces of the NFL. He deserves it. He has a superstar, pop star wife. I mean, he lives a life that people dream about, honestly. And, you know, I'm not mad at him, man. Go ahead, Russ.
You know, I wake up thinking about being great, Larry.
That was one of the things he said yesterday, which I was endlessly amused by. It kind of sounds like Ricky Bobby.
You know, I wake up in the morning, I piss excellence.
I thought Russell's the one person I've seen who was more relatable on Zoom. Like, I was like, he's comfortable here. Like, he looked, and it's not like he's stiff, but he's just not as relatable, I thought, as he was. Like, he was at home yesterday. He's feeling comfy. I'm also excited to watch and see what he does this year, because I do think that there's a ton of optimism and energy in that building, and some of that has to do with the fact that you just went out and traded for Jamal Adams.
Right? That has to do something to you. Now you feel like this defense has a chance. You feel like you might not have to put together game-winning drives every other week. You feel like this defense can go out and shut down an offense, and that has to uplift everybody. I'm sure Pete Carroll's more confident. I'm sure Ken Norton's more confident. Bobby Wagner. Like, it's not just Russell. They're in a point. Russell's in a point of his career where it's time to win. It's time to win again. You got in your Super Bowls early in your career. The middle of your career was okay. Now it's time to go. And you're looking at your team, and you're like, you know what? We actually might have a chance. Every year he says they're playing for the Super Bowl, which every team does. But at some point of the year, you kind of realize that, okay, we might not be ready, or a lot of things have to happen for us to get there. I think he's looking at this team now, and he's saying, hey, let's go. I got running backs. I have receivers. I got linebackers. I got safeties. You got to work on this O-line and see what happens there. But there are pieces for this team to win, so he has to be feeling confident.
He said teams have to plan for him. And that was the thing that struck me the most coming out of this press conference, where he said a lot of interesting things. But, I mean, he's clearly feeling himself, and why not? He's the second-best quarterback, bare minimum, in the NFL.
That is Blue 42. Michael Bump is going to be with us for the rest of the hour. Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. Seahawks training camp is here. They're going to have their first training camp practice later today.
It's
time for two-a-days. 710 ESPN Seattle starts August 17th. Join us weekday for exclusive access to training camp with a daily roundtable. That's 11 a.m. to noon, featuring John Clayton and our Seahawks experts. And then your chance to interact with 710 hosts on a live video chat each afternoon, 710sports.com. 710 ESPN Seattle is your all-access pass to Seahawks training camp. That's with two-a-days starting on August 17th. We're going to get to Mark Emmert making a decision and announcement, kind of showing how he's trying to ride both sides of a fence that I don't think you can straddle. But, Paul, you asked Zach Plesac, who for 6 minutes yesterday, 6.5 minutes, drove around, I presume it was Cleveland, talking about all of the ways in which he had been unfairly villainized for doing exactly what he explained he did, which was going out to dinner with eight friends, leaving the hotel, which he wasn't supposed to do, then going to one of their apartments, which he wasn't supposed to do, and then coming back to the hotel after curfew, which he wasn't supposed to do. You asked if there was any redeeming part of it. If his 6.5 minutes of talking while driving, and he shouldn't have been driving, but if it had been distilled to this, it would have been fine.
It breaks my heart, you know, for people to think I'm a bad teammate or a bad person. But I wanted to share with you guys, you know, that moving forward, you know, there is a selflessness lesson taught here. And at the end of the day, I want everybody to be healthy. I want to be a good teammate. I want to win baseball games, man. That's all I want to do, so.
Well,
that part's great, right? Like, no, just say that.
I don't know. No apologies still. And, I mean, he did say, I'm heartbroken, but I mean, you can't if you say but after something like that, right? Doesn't the all the words before the but mean absolutely nothing?
He says, I don't want people to think I'm a bad teammate. Unfortunately, in that moment, you were a bad teammate, and you have to show remorse. I like the tone. It feels like he's sorry. In that clip, now you play the whole clip, it's like he doesn't understand. Like, what do you mean you don't know what to do?
Evil.
There are rules to this. Like, just follow the rules and you won't be in trouble. But yeah, that I'm mixed emotions. I'm like, oh man, he sounds douchey. Oh man, I feel bad for him. You know, I kind of don't know what to feel. I just know that he messed up and he just needs to say sorry.
Yeah, here was the bad part of it. Here's one of the many examples of how he put his foot in his mouth.
I understand that there are risks people are taking to play this game, and the last thing I would want to do is put anybody at risk. The last thing I would want to do, my little brother has type 1 diabetes, my mom's a nurse. I understand the significance of this illness and this disease, and I know how important it is that we must follow certain procedures and guidelines to ensure safety for the entirety of a group.
I don't think you do know, Zach. I don't think you do.
So many caveats at the beginning of that. Yeah, my brother, he's got the diabetes. Yeah, my mom, she's a nurse. Yep. And they've told me about all of the problems that can come if you decide to go out on the town and have yourself a grand old time before, you know, having to take a rental car home. Yikes.
Yeah. It was pretty tough. It's like, I don't think you do know if you went out like that.
Well, he also goes on to say, like, exactly what he did, but then says in hindsight, after the fact, he found out from a doctor what the actual protocol is. And then he's like, and it turns out that we followed it. Well, you didn't know the protocol when you went out, Zach. You found out afterwards and said, like, see, no, look, I did it right. Well, you didn't check before you did anything, and you weren't supposed to in the first place.
Yeah, it also doesn't matter what Dr. Swab Your Nose says to you. It matters what the MLB guidelines were, and you didn't follow them. So the guy that swabs your nose can tell you anything you want. Like, there's a set of rules. Like, playing, you have to agree to a set of rules, right? Like, that's totally reasonable. Is if you want to play football, if you want to play baseball, you have to agree to give up these sort of things, because the only way that we can think to do this is if we all make this commitment to be safe. And that's why, I mean, as much as I do feel bad for the rookie corner, because I think he made a stupid decision that is going to cost him a ton, but I also think that Seattle's absolutely, that's the right way to handle it, which is, no, you can't do that. Somebody asked on the text line what would have happened if Jamal Adams would have done that. It's like, well, I would have been more bummed, but I definitely wouldn't have cut him. But you can't, you have to honor the guidelines that you're setting. Like, you have to. He should have gone into quarantine. If Jamal Adams did it, he doesn't lose his job, but he goes and sits out for 4 days before he starts getting tested again to determine if he can come into it. And the ability of a team to win in part is going to be how closely team members can follow the rules to stay healthy.
Does this tell you how often these things probably happen without our knowing about it, but just because security is at a certain level this year? Because the fact that you can't refrain from going out with your buddies in Chicago, like Plesak's case, and you had to go to your friend's house and crack some packs. I love baseball cards and opening them as much as the next person, but you really couldn't just refrain from doing that. You couldn't. Like, I feel like that tells me that you have been so entitled in the past to do whatever you want that you think it's okay.
I also don't buy at all that he was cracking some packs. Like, okay, dude. Yeah. Yeah.
You don't think he missed.
I mean, it's really fun.
You don't think he missed curfew because of baseball cards?
No, I don't think he missed curfew because of baseball cards. I at least hope not. But Lydia, you have me thinking something here. Who's going to be the worst at keeping track on their players? Because the Seahawks,
Cincinnati.
That's true. They're so cheap.
Cincinnati's so cheap. They're going to have one dude. They're going to have one dude, and he's also in charge of the equipment for the entire franchise, and he's going to be responsible for making sure everybody stays
guy.
Healthy.
Man, after Cincinnati. Who else? That's almost cheating to answer Cincinnati.
The other teams that I would say, the Titans don't have a big budget, but they seem like they're pretty buttoned down
you
with John
Vrabel. He's
there,
a hard O.
Vrabel.
Yeah,
right?
he'd beat you up.
Yeah.
Miami's probably the toughest environment to do it in,
oh, yeah.
Right? Like Miami, of all of the different places, that's probably
still
the
rebuilding.
Toughest place.
But they had a good year last year, so I feel like they sort of are probably on the same page. I think it's the Jets. You're in New York City. Adam Gase commands zero respect in the locker room. You just traded away your best player. Your second best player opted out, like CJ Mosley. I mean, that is probably a nightmare situation. I think, what do? You're like, hey, you guys aren't allowed to leave East Rutherford. You have to stay in the Meadowlands. You do not get to cross over the island. Good luck trying to keep that enforced.
I bet the Buffalo Bills got it all locked. No one wants to go out really, right? Buffalo, they're like, look, we're just going to stay inside anyway. There's not much to do. Buffalo Bills are probably running a tight ship.
Look, I know you guys were pumped for Applebee's. I know you were waiting this whole year, but there are certain things we've got to give up.
Oh.
There are certain things we have to sacrifice to be able to play a football season, and your Friday nights at Applebee's here in Buffalo are going to be one of them.
Oh, man. Yes, yeah, well, Applebee's, oh, yeah. I'm just not going to say anything more. Chili's is better.
Isn't that... That's Marshawn Lynch's.
That's
is it
spot.
Chili's or Applebee's? Yeah.
It's Applebee's. Go Google it. It's still on there with Kenny.
Sorry. Marshawn, go to Chili's, please. Thank you.
It is Danny and Gallant. Russ stays ready in the kitchen. He wants to cook, and he maybe wants to start his shift a little bit earlier. We'll ask Michael Bumpus what he hears from the quarterback. That's coming up next.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
What did you wake up thinking this morning? I can tell you what Russell Wilson thought when he woke up this morning.
And I wake up thinking about being great, Larry.
Wake up thinking about being great. Absolutely he does. And... Bump, you're familiar with the cooking folks, right? The let Russ cook sentiment.
Very familiar.
Here was when Russ was asked if he had ever perhaps retweeted something saying let Russ cook.
Have I ever retweeted it, you said?
Yes.
No, I haven't retweeted it, Art. I think that, Twitter, it's a fun place for people to have fun and everything else. Listen, the reality is I want to win. That's all I really care about is going out there and finding ways to win. And just constantly making plays.
But there is something to it. And because he was asked later, kind of, do you agree with this idea that maybe you should get turned loose a little bit earlier in games?
The reality is that, early in the games, I want rather than us having it be in the fourth quarter, I think to be able to make some stuff happen. I think we have a crazy stat of the lead of, 56-0 when we have the lead, by halftime and stuff like that. I think, getting ahead is a key thing. I definitely believe in finishing strong. I think we've won a lot of games in the fourth quarter, do some fun things in the fourth quarter and in the games, but let's treat every quarter as the fourth, and I think that's kind of my mentality always.
What do you think of that? The idea of opening it up a little bit more early on?
I like it. And I think that's what he said, treat every quarter like the fourth quarter. That's pretty much saying, let me do my thing early. And he's not going to come out and just say, we need to change our game plan. That's not who he is. He's going to back up whatever Pete Carroll says. He's going to back up whatever the message is for that week or for that team. But that was subtle right there. And I appreciate that. And when you're playing at a high level like he's playing, why not? You want the ball in your hands. You want to make the tough decisions. You want to make the plays. And if he were to shy away from making the plays, what would we think of him? If he were to shy away from winning the ball, what would we think of him? He wouldn't be Russell Wilson. He wouldn't be the franchise quarterback that he is. So I like hearing that from him. And I think he wants to. That's it. I mean, that's the next step in his career, right? Can he come out and dominate a game from the first quarter to the fourth quarter? We know that he can manage a game. We know that he can come back with 2 minutes left on the clock in the fourth quarter. Now, let Russell go and let him do his thing. And to me, that's just RPOs. Just let him walk up to the line of scrimmage, diagnose the defense, and let him make the final decision.
Now, if it's RPOs, then that means getting the ball out quickly, right, Bump? So that helps him out. But I do wonder about the idea of him throwing the ball more times a game just because I think this is going to be the worst offensive line the Seahawks ever had. And that's saying something, seeing as Russ has gotten sacked 99 times over the last 2 years. You have a rookie right guard, most likely. You have your holdover as a guy who's turning 35, I think, at the end of the month and coming off of a knee surgery. And then you have three other starters, and you're not even 100% sure that those guys are definitively your starters. I feel like the balance is still important, but I do wonder if Russell Wilson is growing tired of the balance. You hear him laugh at the beginning of that first answer, and for whatever reason, I just started thinking about the Key and Peele skit where Barack Obama has an anger translator. And I'm trying to think, if Russell Wilson had a frustration translator, what would he have said in that moment, and what has he been thinking in particular over the last couple of years where it's very clear he's one of the best quarterbacks in the game?
He wants more responsibility. And again, I'll always go back to this. I just want to hear how he talks about himself, his team, and the organization when he's with wifey, when he's at home. Like, what are your true thoughts? I don't think he's being fake. I think he's telling us how he feels. But what's the candid? Like, let's have a beer and let's talk about this. I really want to know how he feels about this whole situation. I like that he wants the ball. And for this team to win, he has to have the ball in his hands. He has to make the decisions. But Russ is never going to throw the team under the bus.
Bump, I've been joking, but not really joking, sort of like that sorry, not sorry, about saying that Seattle waits until the end of the second quarter to run the good offense, that they kind of stumble around for the first quarter and a half. And I do think that they play more field position. They're not looking to throw on early downs as much. And then I can't count the number of times you see it where all of a sudden they haven't really done much offensively. And then the final possession of the first half, they move the ball almost effortlessly down the field. I kind of chalk that up to it being more in Russell's hands, and he's playing at tempo. They're playing faster. He might have more control of what they might be running to the line of scrimmage, and so he's calling multiple plays in the huddle. I also worry that that's overly simplified and that that's not really how football works. And someone who's been part of an offense and been in those situations, what do you think happens when all of a sudden they go from being so stagnant to, man, now they just move the ball so efficiently?
I think teams always come in with a game plan. And I think the Hawks' game plan is usually to play it safe, right? Let's not lose this game early. Let's just give us a chance later in the game. And I think that's what it comes down to. And then there's always a point in the game where you have to look at your staff like, it's time to go. It's win or lose now. This drive means a lot. This quarter means a lot. I think the first quarter, I think one of you guys talked about it earlier, you're throwing jabs, you're filling each other out. Like, the Hawks are more like a Mayweather. You know, he's going to box you. He's going to jab you. He's going to move. He's going to play defense. When he has his moment, boom, he's going to hit you, and he's going to put together three or four great rounds to make you think, oh, I get it now. That's what he was doing. He was trying to figure them out. I think that's kind of what the Hawks do, where we want to see, I want to see like Roy Jones Jr. back in the day. I want to see you come out swinging, ducking, haymakers, make it look pretty. But that's just not the personality of this team. And maybe with Russell coming out of his shell a little bit more, showing a little more swag, that will get the, you know, that will filter into the coaching staff, you know, and allow him to go out and do a little bit more. So they just play it safe. You know, they got their 10 plays scripted at the beginning of the game. That's what most teams do. They just adjust a little later, or they let loose a little later than most teams do.
What do you think is going through the average defender who goes up against Russell Wilson? What's going through his head on a play-to-play basis? Are you thinking about the idea that Seattle is balanced offensively and they might run the football? Or are you more concerned about the idea of Russell Wilson beating you over the top every single play? Because I do think that there's got to be something, and you're going to be better able to figure this one out, Bump. But there would be this idea of, okay, well, I do want to make sure that I can come up for run support, and I do want to make sure that I keep an eye on a Chris Carson or whoever else the Seahawks put back there. But at the same time, I would imagine that there is always this constant sense of, I must be alert at all times with Russell Wilson under center. And if you throw the football more, then maybe that feeling magnifies as the game goes on.
Yeah, I think you're right, Paul. I think if you're playing in the box, you're thinking, I just have to tackle because they run the football. They got running backs who run hard. Chris Carson's going to make the first guy miss. I have to wrap up. If you're on the back end, you're thinking, just be disciplined. Don't let anything get behind you because the Hawks are known for the play action. And then the Hawks are known for Russell Wilson getting off schedule and rolling out and buying time. And that's what makes it so hard to play secondary. I was talking to NASA Chobe, one of our producers, and I told him, I go, man, playing DB has to be one of the toughest things in the world, right? Because you have to guard receiver who you can't touch. And then when they make a play, you have to make a tackle in open field. There's just so much space. And I think Russell's good at leading guys into space with his passes. And because he has so much chemistry with his receivers, they're on the same page. You know, Russ gives a look, Lock is flashing that way, DK's going that way. So it has to be really stressful. It's stressful in general to play defense at NFL, but then you add Russell Wilson and the off-script plays, off-schedule plays to it, it has to be frustrating.
The other thing that we heard him talk about was the addition of Jamal Adams. And I think it's pretty clear that adding Adams has, I don't want to say added urgency because that's such a generic expression. I think it's shown that the guys in the locker room, I think it's shown the guys in the locker room that the front office and the coaching staff are putting more into this season. They're gambling more on the outcome of this season. They're trading tomorrow in some senses for what he can bring today. And I think you can hear the excitement as Russell Wilson talks about him.
You know, I've always admired Jamal from a distance. You know, I got to see him coming in as a younger player in first, second year or whatever, and just the kind of leader he was and just the energy that he brought to the field at the Pro Bowls and stuff like that. Just really admired his juice, his energy, his focus every day on the field. You know, he was dialed in, you know, and so I think he's already done that already in the walkthroughs and practices that we've had out here. You can tell that he processes so quickly. You know, he knows how to get sacks. He knows how to make plays. He knows how to has the knack for the ball. And just to continue to add that, we had Diggs last year come in, obviously, with Jamal. It's a special, special group for sure.
He seems pumped to have him.
Yeah, he does seem pumped. I'm pumped. I would be pumped too if I was Russell Wilson. You go into games sometimes, you're like, you look at a defense, you look at matchups, and you're like, we got to put up 35 today, boys. I mean, it is what it is. We got to put up 35 points today. And I bet you he's felt like that most of the season. Like, I have to play almost perfect for us to win, especially last year. So you add a Jamal Adams, you're like, man, we can get away with 24. You know, you're going to try to put up as many points as you want, but you're not as stressed. And Russell Wilson handles stress like better than anyone I've ever seen. Could you imagine him? Now he has less stress. He knows he has ballers on the back end, guys who are going to make plays and cause turnovers, which they did good last year. But it's just knowing that you don't have to go out and make every single play. You're allowed to be human and make your mistakes, and your defense is going to bail you out. This defense has to win two games this year. We have to look at this defense and say they won that football game. If they win two games this year, this team has a real chance.
And if they do win two games, I mean, that's going to give him even more confidence in himself and a feeling probably that no matter what, I'm going to be able to do really whatever I want. If I see a play that's out there, I don't have to play it safe like maybe I would have, especially on in the early days with the Seahawks. If I have a good defense behind me in a way that I haven't ever before while I've been playing at this level, yeah, I hope that they can do it. Again, I've got some real questions about it, but you got the great guy with the mentality under center to maybe make things better.
It is Danny and Gallant. We got Michael Bumpus in here for one more segment, and somebody said Seattle's defense is boring, and I think that's news to Cam Chancellor. We'll explain to Bump what's been going on coast to coast. That's coming up next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
I can't stand this guy. I really can't stand this guy. He is an insufferable backpatter. He thinks very highly of himself despite getting passed over for a head coaching job when going up against Freddie Kitchens. But maybe I should be fair. Maybe I should be more fair to Greg Williams, who yesterday said that the Seahawks defense might be too boring for Jamal Adams.
You know, we're very multiple in how we do those things anyway. You know, we're not just a stand, you know, but Jamal may get bored there because they don't use their safety type things and all the different complexities of maybe this, not showing what they're doing as much as we do.
Bump, is the Seahawks defense boring?
He's kind of right. He is kind of right. They don't do anything really special. They're just playing. And they don't ask their guys to disguise too much. What you see is what you get. They're like, look, just beat us. Now, is Jamal Adams going to be bored? I don't think so. I think he's going to go out and he's going to make plays. But when you look at the pre-snap movements and adjustments, the Seahawks don't do much. So he's kind of right. I don't want to agree with him, but I agree with the Hawks being plain and being really vanilla. As far as Jamal is being bored, I don't agree with that. But the Hawks don't do anything too crazy on defense.
Isn't there something to be said for that, though? Greg Williams strikes me as a guy who loves the complexity of his plays. Like, he loves how fancy they are and how many different things and disguising coverage so the quarterback thinks he's throwing a man-to-man coverage and, whoops, surprise, we're in a zone. And that's great until the player can't remember it or until you've got so many rules that the guy kind of stumbles over it. We've talked. I think that the simplicity is kind of the beauty of Pete Carroll's defense. And I think it allows guys to make plays because they don't have to remember which rules they need to follow in this given situation, given the defensive call. And it allows them. I think it should be exciting for a player like Jamal Adams.
Yeah, when you keep it simple, you're allowed to just react and you're not thinking, right? You have your responsibility, you're going to do it. And within a simple scheme like the Seahawks, the more veteran you are, the more you can play with it, right? If I'm a veteran corner, I know I have this deep third. I can walk up and show man and do some movements. End of the day, boom, I'm going to bail as soon as the ball is snapped. I don't know if the Hawks have to give these guys the freedom to do it, but think about their secondary. You know, they had Shaquille Griffin, third year. You got Trey Flowers, second year last year. You had Tedrick on the back end at some point. So they were pretty young. Maybe with this more veteran-type secondary, they'll allow some more movement. It's all about allowing your players to do things you trust them with. And maybe they just didn't trust those guys to do it. I want to go back and look at the Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor, Richard Sherman years to see what they're doing on the back end before the snap. Maybe that has something to do with it. It's just having a bunch of young guys back there.
In a year with a limited offseason where you are adding Quentin Dunbar, who might be a starter, and you're adding Jamal Adams, who might be a starter, is it better to have a more simple defense bump?
I don't know if it's better. I think it's safe. I think it makes it simple, but eventually you want to do something to confuse the quarterback, to make the quarterback think. Imagine if you go up to the line, you're a quarterback, and you know, okay, pre-snap, I identify the safeties. I look at the corner's technique. There's not a blitz. Okay, this is cover three. Now imagine being the quarterback and walking up to the line. Okay, safeties rolled down. You elongate your cadence. Now the safeties are moving. All right, is it a one high or is it a two high look? You're looking at your corners, they're shifting. It just gives the quarterback more to think about pre-snap. It puts more responsibility on the quarterback. So maybe that's why we've seen guys like Shaab come in and ball out, because he knew exactly what he was looking at. When you make guys think, you make guys second guess, you get more mistakes.
There's also a sense that Seattle puts the onus on the quarterback to beat us. Like that's, and we've seen it happen. They're going to avoid the backbreaking mistake, right? Like that's probably the number one prerequisite of Seattle's defense is don't, and it's not like there's any defense that's like, hey, we don't mind if we give up a big play, but other defenses take chances, right? The more complex it is, the more chance it is that somebody busts a coverage. And Seattle is, hey, above all else, keep it in front of you. And I think that sort of system rewards having better players. That scheme can be used to cover up maybe a lack of personnel. And in Seattle's case, I think maybe it shows you that you do need transcendent players, and the fact that the defense isn't as good now, that it doesn't have five Hall of Famers, sort of speaks to the fact that you need for this to work, you do need to have some guys that hopefully, like Jamal Adams is, that are that next cut above, the superior type player.
Yeah, it's all about your talent. It's all about your personnel. Personnel allows you just to be more creative. And you got to think about it. You had Trey Flowers, a guy who hadn't played corner. You want to keep it simple for him, right? You got Shaquille Griffin, a guy who's really just trying to prove himself. You want to keep it simple for him. So it's all about what you have. And for the past few years, they haven't had a great defense. And I think one of you guys said it earlier, and they might not ever have the greatest defense in the league again. You know, they might not ever be able to do some of the things that they did with that defense. So you just have to ask your players to do what they're good at. And if they think that just playing a cover three and keeping it simple is the best move for this defense last year, then you go with it. But now with a Jamal Adams, you got to use him. 6.5 sacks, 10 tackles for losses, 28 hits on the quarterback. Like, you're not going to let that go to waste, right?
No, I hope not. I mean, and honestly, that guy might be your best chance at having someone who can get, I don't know, more than 4 sacks, because he did it last year.
They brought him in for his pass rush, line him up at defensive end, bring him off the edge.
I mean, you joke about it, but, I mean, he was better at it last year.
It better be a joke. It better be a joke.
Right. I mean, it's. I hope it is, too. Danny and Gallant, Michael Bumpus is hanging out with us. So we heard from one backpatter, Greg Williams. We played it a little bit earlier in the hour. Bruce Arians, this guy's backpatting himself too. Oh, listen to how he talks about the way that he coaches Tom Brady.
Oh, no, he's just another guy. You know, he gets cussed out like everybody else. So it's no different that way.
I don't buy that. I don't buy that. And honestly, if that is something that's happening, I feel like he should be tried, because you are Bruce Arians, sir. Know your place.
Well, Tom Brady's not just another guy, first off. He's not just another guy. He is probably the greatest quarterback to ever play this game. So that's where you lose me. It's like, you don't have to like bow down to him and, oh my gosh, Tom Brady, but your best player or the best player to play the game like the undrafted free agent who was trying to sneak a girl into the hotel room. There's levels to this. You just don't do that. So I get he's trying to keep everything kosher and calm or whatnot, but Tom Brady, he's not another guy.
It'll be interesting to see how Arians handles this. Brady picked him. I mean, above all else, like Brady decided to go to a team that he coached, and Brady knows enough about offenses that he believes that this thing's gonna work for him. I do think it's very interesting to see if Bruce, who fancies himself the quarterback whisperer, because when Peyton Manning switched teams, basically Peyton got to run the offense with Denver, right? Like Adam Gase was the offensive coordinator, but like we all know who's making the calls down there. Like it was Peyton's offense. I don't have a great feel for how this is going to be. Certainly Bruce is going to present the swagger like, hey, this is my offense, and I brought the best out of Ben Roethlisberger, and I brought the best out of all of these different Andrew Luck and all of these different quarterbacks, Carson Palmer. I'm going to be interested to see how this is going to work together, if he's going to present himself as the mastermind.
Well, it sounds like he wants control of this thing. He says, look, Brady's got to come in. He's got to learn our offense. He's got to learn our language. He doesn't sound like he's just rolling out the red carpet for him as far as schemes and language or whatnot. But at some point, they're going to have to meet in the middle. You don't just throw away 20 years of football and say, look, you're going to do it my way, when the way that he did it for 20 years worked. Like, Bruce, has he won a Super Bowl? I don't think so, right? He's won six. Like, you want this man's input.
If Tom Brady, after the play is called in, stands up and turns a middle finger toward Bruce Arians, it's not Tom Brady's job status that's going to be in question on Monday. Like, it's not like people are like, oh, are they going to discipline? Are they going to bench Brady? It's like, are they going to let Bruce come back and coach again after that happened?
Do you guys think that partnership's going to work? Because I think a Bruce Arians system, and that relies on quarterbacks just standing in there and hanging in there for deep developing routes, and behind that offensive line, and with the way that Tom Brady's been throwing deep down the field the last couple of years, I don't think this is the matchup that Brady should have been looking for.
That's a good point. And he doesn't throw the deep ball like he used to. And again, that's where they have to meet in the middle. You have to look at what Tom Brady does well and adjust your offense to fit him. Just like we're talking about the Seahawks defense adjusting to their new personnel, that's what Arians has to do with Tom Brady. Tom can't sit there and toss the ball 50, 60 yards down the field. And we say you want about Jameis Winston. He could toss it 50, 60 yards down the field. He might not throw it to the right person, but he had the physical talent to do that. That's not Tom Brady's game right now. So we'll see how they adjust. And that's what the great coaches do. They adjust, but use your weapons wisely. Tom Brady, get it out of his hands quick and let Mike Evans and them boys run, man.
I was surprised too, Paul. Like, I didn't think it was the best fit for him, for Tom. The fact that Brady picked it, though, makes me think that he knows. I mean, Tom Brady knows and believes that this is the right fit for him. He wouldn't pick it if this was
Is it the weapons? I mean, is it the weapons over the scheme? The weapons are awesome.
Well, right, it's just Mike Evans, and then it's his buddies, right? Like Gronk. Who's the other old guy they brought in? LeSean McCoy.
They do have Chris Godwin.
Godwin's
yeah. I haven't watched Godwin hard enough to know, and Bump, you as a wide receiver probably would understand whether or not this guy's really good, but the guy put up stats, that's for sure.
Numbers don't lie. I mean, you do have a great distraction on the other side in Mike Evans, so you're going to get open. They can't double-team everybody. We'll see, man. We'll see. The fact that you're right, Tom Brady chose the Bucs, makes me think that they had to have many conversations. All right, what's this offense going to look like? What are you going to allow me to do? Can we work together? I'm sure they weren't allowed to sit down and talk about it, but I guarantee you they met up. They Zoom, they FaceTime, they got to know each other a little bit. He doesn't just go there and say, oh, look at that personnel, let's get it. He has to feel like he has some type of control over this offense, right?
That's true. Bump Day happens twice a week. We always love it when it happens. Michael Bumpus, thanks for joining us on this Friday, and have yourself a great weekend, buddy.
All right, guys, have a good one.
It is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle. Coming up next, Russell Wilson. He took the world by storm with that press conference that he had yesterday, and he's got some people thinking things that they have been wanting and hoping for years and years. Our reactions to some of what Russell said next. right here on Danny and Gallant.